Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. They were the two amigos, both former governors, ranchers, men with a taste for the dust of the Southwest, and they were the two new North American presidents, Vicente Fox of Mexico and George Bush of the USA. They were also, they proclaimed, the best of friends, determined to lead Mexico and the U.S. to unprecedented new levels of cooperation and friendship.
I know there are some in this world and our country who want to build walls between Mexico and the United States. I want to remind people, fearful people build walls. Confident people tear them down. And I'm confident that a strong relationship, and I'm confident that good neighbors and a strong relationship is in our nation's best interests.
Today, we're not only neighbors, we're not only friends, we're partners to work together, building a better future for both of our nations.
But students of history will recall that there were two addresses made to the joint session of Congress in September 2001. The first was on that same state visit from the Mexican president. And the second came less than 2 weeks later when George Bush addressed the nation after the attacks of 9/11. In that short time, everything changed. Talk of immigration was no longer talk about opening borders. It was now a question of American safety. And thus began the undoing of the much vaunted friendship. Connection listeners, we're continuing our series, Friends and Neighbors, this hour. Why does Mexico matter to the United States? Is it a friend or just a neighbor? And what's been lost since the dialogue between the two leaders went silent? What's ahead? Our number's 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And my guests this hour are Ana Maria Salazar. She's a journalist, professor, and expert on security issues in Latin America. She was a White House policy advisor in the Clinton administration. She's joining us this morning from Mexico City. Welcome to The Connection.
Good morning, Dick.
And Ruben Navarrete is also with us. He's a columnist and editorial writer for the Dallas Morning News. His own Mexican-American family went from the grape fields to graduate school in three generations, and he writes now extensively on immigration issues. Ruben, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Let me start, Ana Maria, with you. Looking back at that week in September of 2001, what really went wrong? Was it the attack itself on the buildings, or was it the way that the two presidents reacted in the days after?
I think it's a little bit of both. Clearly, September 11 has changed U.S. priorities. U.S. is now preoccupied almost exclusively on terrorism, concerned about another terrorist attack in the United States. And prior to September 11, I think President Bush's priorities was looking down south, and they were going to kind of underline the importance of not only Mexico, but Latin America in general. I mean, they had the sense that if they could develop more trade in South America and Mexico, that not only would the continent be better off, but the United States would be better off. So in part, I think what the most important aspect is to underline the change of priorities from the U.S. perspective. And I think the second issue is something that it's not only has to do with September 11, but it has to do with the way Mexicans view the United States. It's an ambivalent relationship. It's a love-hate relationship. And unfortunately, when September 11 takes place and Mexico's reaction was somewhat lukewarm, I think at least from the Washington's perspective, the White House perspective, it sent a very strong message, or at least a question mark, as to how reliable mm-hmm. was Mexico as a partner. So I think there's still a very important discussion taking place in Mexico as to what should be the relationship with the United States, what should be the priorities with the United States. And it's a discussion that affects President Fox, because he doesn't necessarily know where to go now that the migration issue is clearly not a priority in the United States, but it is a priority at least from President Fox's perspective.
Let me go to Ruben on this, though. If President Fox, in that week of September 2001, Ruben, had said, whoa, President Bush, if you need any extra oil, we're here with it. We're here to help you. Anything we can do on the border, we can help you. Anything, you know, you want in military terms, let us know. If that kind of reaction had come from Mexico, would we be having this conversation today?
No, absolutely not, Dick. Everything would be different. It would have changed the relationship. It would have changed everything that transpired since then. It all would have come out differently. I actually will go further. I spoke to a person here in Dallas who does political consulting work for Fox and Bush. And actually, Dallas is one of those cities that has brought the two leaders together often. And right after September 11th, he said, speaking as an American, that he thought Fox had really bungled this. And I have to agree. He thought that had Fox come forward on September 11th or September 12th and said directly, almost speaking to Al-Qaeda, to say, you know what, we were attacked yesterday. The attack took place in New York at the World Trade Center and in D.C. at the Pentagon. But we as Mexicans were attacked. And in where we come from, you attack our neighbors, you attack us. We take this as a direct affront, and we're committing troops, if need be, to go to Afghanistan. We're committing oil. We're standing side by side as partners and allies and friends with our northern neighbors. Had Fox done that, had he been manly, had he been a leader at that moment, instead of equivocating and listening to the naysayers and the nationalists in Mexico, everything would have been different. And I'll tell you something, Dick, had he done that exactly like that, today we'd have an immigration accord. And I'll go further. He'd actually have the most prickly part of that immigration accord, he'd have amnesty for those 5 million undocumented Mexicans living in the U.S.
Okay, we need to just color in one more piece of this picture before we stand back and look at what we're, you know, what the overall landscape is. And Ana Maria, that's Mexico's role at the United Nations when it came time to choose either to support the United States push for a war with Iraq or with, you know, the other members of the Security Council to stand back. Mexico had the either good or bad fortune, depending on how you look at it, to have a seat at the Security Council and to have to make that choice. Was this the nail in the coffin in the relationship between the two men when Mexico did not support the United States?
It clearly underlines the differences in between both countries. And you know what's even I guess more complicated is that Mexico did not have to vote. I mean, let's remind the listeners that there was no vote. Basically, the United States decided to attack Iraq without the support of the Security Council and the United Nations. And what Mexico did, despite the fact that they did not have to vote, they publicly stated that they would not support the United States. And folks,
a mistake, Ana Maria?
Well, it depends on the way you look at it. You know, folks behaved the way, you know, probably Bush behaved. He looked at the polls in Mexico, and the polls clearly stated that more than 80% of of Mexicans did not support the war against Iraq. They did not want President Fox to support the United States. So he looked at the polls, and we must also remind the listeners that this year is an election, midterm election years in Mexico, and he just decided that he couldn't support the United States. If you look at it from his perspective, it probably was the right decision, especially when there's all these question marks in regards to what, you know, information or what intelligence was available in regards to weapons of mass destruction. And you look at what is happening to Blair and the way he's being attacked by the way he's being attacked internally in England. So, there is a question mark. I think, you know, it's bad for the bilateral relationship. Clearly, it's terrible for the bilateral relationship. But from folks, you know, political perspective, it probably was the right decision.
What do you think, Ruben?
I completely disagree. It was the wrong decision. And here's why. When you elect somebody, particularly in a democracy, you elect a leader. That's what they're supposed to do. They're supposed to lead. They're not supposed to sit up there and put their finger in the wind and figure out where the polls are going and say, well, gee whiz, the Mexican people want to go that direction. Okay, I'll go along.
Wow, but it was 88%, Ruben. That was a pretty strong consensus in Mexico to not want to vote with the United States here.
It was Fox's job then to convince those Mexicans to go in the other direction, or if they didn't want to go, simply to go in that direction themselves and to lead. That's what leaders do. And I'll give you one example. Here's the rub here. The Mexicans want to have it both ways. They want to be able to say, look, gee whiz, look at the poll numbers where they were on Iraq. Fox had no choice but to follow the poll numbers. Okay, great. Sounds good. We follow poll numbers. Fast forward to the United States, where 60 to 70% of Americans today oppose amnesty. Okay? Now, to which the Mexicans say, oh, you got to ignore those polls. You got to ignore those polls. You can't just cower in front of polls. President Bush has to lead. He has to change public opinion. They can't have it both ways. In fact, whether you're the president of Mexico, the president of the United States, the job is the same. It's to lead people. And often 80% of your population has it wrong, and you have to convince them otherwise.
So you're saying that if Fox had said, you know what, we're going to, you know, should it come to a vote, Anna Maria points, should it come to a vote, we will support our northern neighbor. You don't think he would have been torn apart in Mexico City political circles, perhaps jeopardizing his chances in the midterm elections coming up this summer?
I don't think so, because he's been torn apart since then, absent that. That's the irony. I mean, poor Vicente can't cut a break. He did everything the Mexican people wanted him to do. He took a beating in the midterm elections. He may take a beating next month again. He's still unpopular. His approval rating's below 50%, as it has been all throughout this. There's an interesting story here.
Ruben, I have to stop you right there, Ruben. What's interesting is that actually his polls went up dramatically after he made that decision. And it was clearly a very popular decision. I agree with you, Ruben, that leaders need to lead and they need to help change opinions, which leads to my second comment. I'm not clear that, you know, regardless of what President Bush may try to do right now in trying to lead the American people and trying to provide amnesty to undocumented workers, Mexican undocumented workers in the United States, I don't think he can do it exactly for the same reasons. The polls are clearly against it.
Well, that's why you got to try. That's what makes people leaders. But let me interrupt you now. The point is that I was in Guadalajara in Mexico when war broke out in Iraq, and I remember very clearly what the mood was like there. It did, I think, there was this level of a popularity bump on that day around that time as Mexicans began to see President Fox standing up to the United States. But at the same time, it's an interesting thing. Mexicans realize, and I think Mexicans, particularly in the big cities, in Mexico City, in Guadalajara, realize that their destinies are intertwined with the American destiny. And it's an odd thing. I could sometimes walk the streets in Guadalajara and find people there who are supportive of Bush, supportive of the Iraq war, despite what the Mexican president was saying.
What, and also supportive of the Mexican president at the same time?
Yeah, they liked the fact that he was standing up to the Americans, but at the same time, after the popularity bump went away, that little bubble went away, there was this sense that, very much like the Brits feel, the people in Britain feel, that the destinies are intertwined. We have this popular notion that somehow all Mexicans are alienated from the United States. That's not true. It may be the case with some members of Congress, but whenever I go to Mexico, I'm always amazed at how intertwined the two cultures and societies really are. I mean, face it, Mexico gets $10 billion a year from the United States from Mexican immigrants who are living up here. When September 11th happened, you know, guess what happened? People got laid off. Money didn't go home. Grandma went to the Western Union station and it wasn't there. Mexico was attacked, whether it realized it or not. It took a direct hit on September 11th. The Mexican people understand that. Sometimes their leaders don't.
All right, Connection listeners, this hour, a conversation about Mexico in our series Friends and Neighbors. Mexico was being hailed just a couple of years ago as that great good neighbor, strong partner to the United States, and now the presidents of the U.S. and Mexico are barely speaking to each other. So let's talk about the risks of that deteriorating relationship. We'd like to have you in on the conversation. We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio.
We're building a relationship that is unique in the world, a relationship of unprecedented closeness and cooperation. And this visit is a milestone on that journey.
That was George Bush, September 4th, 2001, less than 2 years ago, talking about unprecedented closeness and cooperation. Who knew that just days later his world would change forever, that the Mexican president, being so warmly embraced at the White House, would so quickly come to be seen as a fair-weather friend, at least in Washington. So, Connection listeners, a continuing conversation this hour about how that relationship has changed and what it means about relations between the two countries. With me this hour, Ana Maria Salazar. She's a journalist, professor, and expert on security issues in Latin America, author of National Security, The Challenge of Democracy. She's joining us from Mexico City. And Ruben Navarrete, a third-generation second-generation Mexican-American and columnist for the Dallas Morning News, is also with us. He's author of a book called A Darker Shade of Crimson, Odyssey of a Harvard Chicano. Now, Ana Maria, let me go back to taking a look at where we are today. When I look, for example, at the way that Bush and Fox could barely even speak to each other at the Cabo San Lucas summit, later at the Evian summit in France, I mean, it leads you to believe that as long as either or both of those men are still in office, relations between the United States and Mexico are going to be in a deep freeze. Is it that bad?
I think it's going to continue to be in a deep freeze, especially if we look forward to what's going to happen in both countries in the next couple of years. I mean, the U.S. is going to be facing presidential politics and presidential election pretty soon, and as we all know. Foreign relations or issues that have to do with outside the United States don't necessarily elect a president. Now, there has been a question mark as to how the Republicans are going to try to promote or at least try to look for Hispanic votes in Mexico. And I think at one point they have been trying to use the migration issue or potentially talking about the migration issue as a way of trying to promote Hispanic vote, Latino vote in the United States. But I just can't see President Bush and his team becoming interested in Mexico in the next year and a half. And Mexico, President Fox is, as Ruben pointed out, is going through a very difficult time. There was so much expectations around this president, and he was going to be the president of change, and he was going to basically transform this country, and realistically nothing has happened. And I'm afraid, as also Ruben pointed out, that he's not going to fare very well in the midterm elections. And even if his party did well in the midterm elections, he has such a bad relationship with his own party that I'm not too sure that he's going to be able to promote or at least pass through Congress those laws that he had, you know, that mm-hmm. promote change in Mexico. So it's going to be very difficult for folks. And when you look down the line, who are the potential presidential candidates here in Mexico, and elections will take place in 3 years, you know, those candidates are probably going to base their platform around anti-American sentiment, which is so ingrained in Mexico. And Ruben is right. I mean, I think the more vocal part of the left in Mexico and certain the Mexican elite is quite anti-American, but don't underestimate how that anti-Americanism kind of goes down to other levels. And in part, it has to do. I was raised in Mexico. I was born in Arizona. I come from a Mexican-American family. I've lived in both countries. And it always surprised me how this anti-American comes up at different points. And a part has to do with the education. We were all educated in, you could look at the textbooks we were educated in, and basically hating and distrusting the Americans. And that was part also of the political platform of the party that was in power for the last 70 years. So it's changing, and it's changing in part because there's so many Mexicans living in the United States. And as also Ruben pointed out, there's towns, entire villages that depend on that money that their families that live in the United States are sending back into Mexico.
Let's pretend just for a moment here that it's Karl Rove who's the leader of the free world rather than President Bush, because Ruben, I can't imagine, given the fact that the newspapers in this country are now, you know, trumpeting that Latinos are the largest minority in America as a numerical fact, is going to be lost on the planners at the White House. And the very idea that Bush would sort of say, write off his relationship with a Mexican president and two-thirds of the Latinos living in the United States watching that so closely, I mean, you'd think that the White House is the one that's going to move here.
It's a very important and good question. Rest assured, first of all, that Karl Rove eats, breathes, and sleeps politics and how well he can go out there and get the Hispanic vote. It's an obsession with him. He wants that Hispanic vote. I think at the end of the day, because due to Rove's efforts, Bush will on election day probably walk away with a good solid 40% of the Hispanic vote in the United States. I think that's already in the
cards.
You
think he's got it in the
happen.
Bag now, or do you think that there's going to have to be a change in relations between Mexico and the United States to get that?
That's what makes your question such a good one. I think he's already got it in the bag. See, there's this implicit in the question is this idea that my father, who was born in the United States, is a career cop in the San Joaquin Valley in California, whose own father, my grandfather, was from Chihuahua, Mexico, that somehow my father looks to Vicente Fox in terms of a cue as to who to vote for in the next presidential election. That's not true. It's not going to happen. Mexican Americans, I think, greeted the arrival of Vicente Fox on the stage with applause, with admiration, with gratitude, because he restored democracy to Mexico, to the land of our forefathers. But on September 11th and since then, it became clear, listen, are you an American or are you a Mexican? For my parents, for 20 million Mexican Americans, 15 million Mexican Americans in this country, I think they define themselves primarily as Americans. I get hundreds upon hundreds of emails from people like this from my column around the country every month. And it is clear that if it wasn't already true on September 11th, it's true now. These people will vote their own conscience independent of Bush's relationship with Mexico.
Okay, but Ruben, you have also written that, you know, one of the dreams of Mexicans living in the United States is to earn enough money and save enough money and buy themselves a home, .. in Mexico, not in the United States, and so that they have to stay connected, you know, to the country. Yeah. They have to know that the relations between the U.S. and Mexico are so good that getting across the border, going either direction, is easier, not more difficult.
Well, that's that's another group of people, and that's an important group of people. It's 4 or 5 million Mexican immigrants. You see, in Boston right now, or in Los Angeles or Phoenix, you've got people like me, Mexican Americans born in this country, a second generation in my case, and you've got people who just arrived here who are Mexican citizens, who are Mexican, don't have residency, or maybe have become citizens, but their allegiance is still to Mexico. These are two different types of folks, and it is true that when you talk to people in the Spanish media, you see that Mexican immigrants, Mexican nationals, are still very supportive of immigration policy, of amnesty, of some sort of a guest worker program. Those issues still do not resonate, I think, with Mexican Americans, who are now just as concerned with things like national security and protecting the border. Mm-hmm. So again, there's a world of difference. There might be a guy down the block named Navarrete, but he just got here. I've been here all my life, and my parents were born here. We're Mars and Venus, you see. We're two different types of voters, and that's an important part of this equation.
All right, Anna Maria, one quick one from you, and then we're going to go to a call.
You know, Ruben's absolutely right, and I think the President Fox was betting on the fact that Mexican Americans in general would support him and his proposal and this idea of providing amnesty to those 4 or 5 million undocumented Mexicans in the United States. And I think he's wrong, because we're talking about two very, very different groups. And as it is right now, I believe that what Fox was betting on, that you know, in general, Hispanics in general, I mean, Mexicans in general that live in the United States would support him. It was wrong. It was a wrong bet. And in fact, it was a lack of understanding as to the way Hispanic politics works in the United States.
Let's go to Cedar Rapids, Iowa now. Carl's waiting on the line. Hi, Carl.
Well, hi. How are you doing, you guys?
I'm fine. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, you're welcome. Ruben, you know, you say a leader is supposed to lead, but if a leader has to lead against the wishes of the country, I mean, in such a high percentage, like 80% are against the war, I mean, you know, Adolf Hitler did the same thing. The Germans really didn't want any war, and it infuriates me when I hear somebody say a leader should go against the wishes of the population of the country.
Carl, let me use perhaps a more apt example here, because in this series, Friends and Neighbors, we took a look first at Canada. Now we're looking at Mexico. In Canada, the Prime Minister was, in fact, accused of doing the same thing, holding his finger in the wind, waiting, trying to see what the Canadian public wanted him to do in terms of support for a UN resolution or not, and then at the very last minute said, okay, we're going to vote, you know, against the Americans. I think what Ruben's saying is that the people need a little bit more direction than that.
Yeah, but if that large a percentage of the country is against the war, how can he possibly, persuade them to change their mind?
Ruben.
I mean, there must be something wrong here somewhere.
I think the way you persuade people to change their minds, if you look throughout American history, you look at the great initiatives pushed by presidents just in the last century, you talk about Roosevelt and Truman and Kennedy. and even the Great Society from Johnson, these are people who created visions that the American people could not yet conceive of and then taught them to conceive of it. And I think what people respect is not so much people who agree with them, but people who stand for something, who agree that there's a principle adherence here. And I think that's really what could have benefited Fox in this case. And if I didn't already believe it, I became convinced of it when I listened to my father-in-law. My wife is from Mexico. She came here when she was 9 years old. And my father-in-law was part of that majority in Guadalajara who thought that that Mexico should not become involved with the war in Afghanistan. But when Fox then sort of cowed to those numbers, my father-in-law surprised me months later by calling back saying, you know what, the president really disappointed me. I would expected him to stand firm in his beliefs. He'd been saying about how all this stuff about how the United States was our friend and our ally. And I really don't respect this guy anymore.
Anna Maria,
people are fickle. What can I tell you?
Yes. Anna Maria, in your view, how much of this has to do with the fact that Fox is trying to find his place in a Mexico, which, as Reuben pointed out, for so many years has been run by a party which paid no attention to what the people wanted at all, the PRI, and whether or not his indecision in terms of taking a lead against the United States or leading his people, or saying, no, we've got to be with these people. Is that a part of what's plaguing him?
I think it's a part, but clearly, when you have more than 80% of the population and you're asking a president to support another country, it's not even, it's not a policy that would directly impact Mexicans in Mexico. We're talking about another country. We're talking, which, although very close to Mexico and is probably essential to the well-being of Mexico, he just couldn't go against it. There's actually a better example that's been used quite frequently to criticize Mexico is when President Clinton made the decision to provide a financial packet for Mexico in 1994 when Mexico was going through the economic crisis. With the currency problem. And President Clinton decided to support Mexico, provide the packet, which was billions of dollars, and it was very unpopular. But the difference
unpopular
here...
Where?
In the United States.
Okay,
it was
right.
Very unpopular in the United States. And, that is used as an example of leadership. But the difference here, and this is the problem that Fox has, that within the United States, there was a very, very important constituency that basically pressured Clinton, President Clinton at the time, to make sure he provided that packet and had to do with the financial sector in the United States. The problem that Fox has is that those groups in Mexico that clearly benefit from a good, strong, healthy bilateral relationship are not organized enough to be able to become a lobby or a group that publicly pressures to make sure that we have a healthy relationship.
So it's the older forces, in fact, that are the squeakier wheels in Mexico.
In part, and in those those villages and those families that basically benefit from this relationship are not organized in a way that creates kind of a generalized pressure to be able to support a healthy relationship. I think that is eventually going to change, and I think this what has happened in the last couple of years is making a lot of groups very nervous in Mexico. Governors, for example,
going in that direction.
I think things are going to change, but it's going to take time. We have the Association of Governors who are realizing how dangerous this is, especially those on the border. There's just the general the financial sector is very nervous. The business sector is very nervous, and I think we're going to probably start seeing these sectors starting to pressure for a much healthier, closer relationship with the United States.
You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. Next call, Waterford, Wisconsin. Carl's with us. Hi, Carl.
Hi, I enjoy the program and I enjoy the discussion today.
Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, I'm disturbed at our president, I think, more than anything else, because it seems like everybody has to fall into line to what he believed was the right way, and friends don't have a right to disagree. And he seems to be making this so very personal.
Let me ask you about one extreme example that's used here, Carl, and that is Gerhard Schroeder in Germany. People point to him as using a sort of anti-Americanism for his own electoral gain in those crucial months. Do you think that that's an apt comparison to Fox's position here?
Well, I don't know that I've read that much that I could make that kind of comparison. I see the world leaders as standing up for their own convictions.
I mean,
just because Bush says Iraq is a bad country, we got to go get them right now, everybody doesn't have to agree. And we don't have to attack them because they don't agree with us. I think we made it personal. I don't think they did.
And you're saying that there ought not to be consequences as a result of taking a stand that, you know, matches your country's electorate or matches your particular point of view as a leader.
No, I think our friendship with countries should be able to withstand disagreements. It certainly does in marriages. It does in any relations you have with anybody. You don't always have to agree. And if there's a disagreement, the bigger guy is going to beat up on the littler guy.
Yeah, I actually, Reuben, wonder about that when I see Bush and Fox at a summit, in Europe, for example, where it does, in fact, seem like Mexico's being punished.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I think here I want to take the Bush administration to task. It can't push this too far. It should be careful because if it knows anything about history and if it doesn't, it should go out and learn. It's got a very difficult relationship with Mexico. 50, 60, 70 years ago, there was this sense among many American administrations that Mexicans should be subservient to them. It was in the Roosevelt administration that the ambassador to Mexico at the time described Lázaro Cárdenas, the new president of Mexico, as a good soldier who would take orders from a superior authority. That was completely wrong. Lázaro Cárdenas was a great Mexican leader, and he's now, you know, idolized in Mexico. They build named boulevards after him. So he stood up to the Americans. He actually is the one who took back the Mexican oil industry from American interests. So there's this historical context that's important, and I sometimes worry that Karl Rove and the political folks in the White House either don't know anything about history or they're doomed to repeat it. They go forward like bulls in china shops and treat Mexico as if it's this insubordinate child that needs to be disciplined. That's a very dangerous road to go down. But I agree with the caller that President Bush has, I think to his detriment, taken this too personally. This is a very personal slight as far as Bush is concerned. He welcomed Fox into his home. This was the first state dinner, was in Mexico's honor. And his friend let him down. He's not about to forget it.
All right, Carl, thanks for that call. Our telephone number, 1-800-423-8255. Connection listeners, as we consider the importance of American friends and neighbors on both sides of the, to the north and to the south, how much does it matter how those relationships are nurtured? And at a time when the United States could use all the partners it can get, how important is it to keep hands across the border? 1-800-423-8255. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. This past weekend, Vicente Fox, Mexico's president, was part of a radio program hosted by the BBC World Service. He was talking about the now quite shaky relationship between the United States and Mexico, and as part of that program, took a question from a caller north of the United States, a caller from Canada.
What are the positive and negative aspects of being so closely linked with the United States, both economically and now increasingly culturally?
Well, I would say that positive aspects have to do with being neighbor of the largest market in the world and the largest economy. This certainly means opportunities to us, not only in investment or in business development in Mexico, but also, for instance, in tourism. Mexico receives over 20 million visitors every year as tourists into our country, and most of them would come from the United States. So it's very important.
Vicente Fox talking about the relationship as very important. Connection listeners, we're continuing our conversation this hour about the relationship as it stands now between the United States and Mexico. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. Next call from Boston, Massachusetts, and Ben's with us. Hi, Ben.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call. I have to say that you all got it wrong with regards to the policy of George Bush and Mexico. I think the real fact is that what happened on 9/11 and the fight against terrorism does not allow for the type of open border that people are looking for, yes, to the Mexicans. It doesn't allow it. The non-support of Vicente Fox to the war in Iraq is just an excuse. But the fact is that the policy of the United States now regards to fighting terrorism does not allow for the type of open border.
And who missed that, Ben? Do you think the Mexican president, Vicente Fox, missed that and should have said, hey, what can we do to tighten up the border so we can control the flow of people back and forth?
I don't think he missed anything. It's just unfortunate that 9/11 happened. I'm sorry for the Mexicans, and that's the way it is.
Anna Maria Salazar, it's just tough luck.
Exactly, that's what it is. And all these excuses people are giving is that they don't understand what America, the way America sees terrorism and the way they want to fight against it. They cannot allow Mexicans to have the kind of free access. It will jeopardize the security of this country, period.
All right, Carl, thanks for that. Anna Maria?
He's got a good point. I mean, part of the problem is that Mexico clearly depends on having their northern border, making sure that Mexican migrants can come into the United States, whether legally or illegally. I mean, it's almost a national security issue for Mexico. If that border is closed down and Mexican migrants cannot go through it, they make it more difficult, it's going to impact Mexico in thousands of ways. And probably the most important way is that all this money that returns to Mexico could dry up, not completely, but could dry up, and the enormous impact it would have in these villages and these extremely poor communities, and what it would mean in the way of unrest when you're especially in an environment where there's a huge unemployment, there's a huge lack of opportunities in Mexico. So on the one hand, Mexico depends on this open border, and on the other hand, the United States is saying, we're closing down the border. We're scared, we're worried that we're going to have terrorists coming through our borders, and we're just basically going to take whatever steps necessary to close down. So he's got a good point. And in one area where I disagree with Ruben is I don't think even before September 11th there was the political will in the United States to provide amnesty to 3 million to 4 million Mexicans.
You think Bush was promising something he couldn't deliver back when relations were good?
I think that what they were promising was something very different than what Mexico was thinking they were going to get. You know, they talk about the whole enchilada at one point, that they were going to get amnesty for everybody. I don't think there was, I don't think there was a political will within the United States. And there's this other issue of all these other migrant groups, which were starting to ask questions. Well, wait a second. Why are we only going to give amnesty to the Mexicans? Why? What about the Dominicans, the Jamaicans, the Haitians, the Africans, I don't think that was going to happen. So they created all these expectations and promises that were never going to be fulfilled.
All right. Our telephone number, 1-800-423-8255. Ben, thanks for that call. Next to Waltham, Massachusetts, and JP's on the line. Hi, JP.
Hi, Dick. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
Just want to throw in out there as well, congratulations on your report in Baghdad. It was brilliant, and it deserves a Pulitzer Prize. So
that's
want to throw
nice
that out there.
Okay.
I just want to make a point. I'm originally from Puerto Rico, and I want to kind of throw in, I guess, a Latin perspective. My father's Cuban. But it seems to me clear, Ruben is a very intelligent person, and I definitely respect what he has to say. But it's a very clear wrongdoing with what happened with Iraq. And even though politicians can be fickle, as many are, and I do respect Bush as far as the fact that he stands his ground, but what he believed in was wrong. And the whole war was unjustified, and Vicente Fox ultimately made his decision by what was right and wrong, and it was clearly wrong what was going on, so he stuck to his guns. And the repercussions are, of course, the, you know, sort of rocky relationship between the United States and Mexico, which is really unfortunate, but Vicente Fox should not be held accountable for that, and I believe the Bush administration is at fault for unilaterally trying to just, you know, justify this war and alienating countries if they did not stand by him.
Okay, JP, let me take, if I can, the first part of what you said and ask Ruben to respond, that maybe Vicente Fox said no thanks to the war because that was something that he actually believed rather than looking at the polls.
Well, it's entirely possible that he believed it, but I think it's pushing it too far. It's engaging in revisionist history early on to say that somehow Fox is now vindicated because we're having this discussion about where are the weapons of mass destruction, did the president or the administration mislead people? Clearly, Fox didn't know then what we all know now. This was a whole different scenario. I think of being on that Security Council really as the issue. The fact is, Mexico wanted as a plum, as a nice little, you know, juicy treat, this seat on the Security Council. It wanted to be a big grown up country and sit on Security Council with all these other big grown up countries. And lo and behold, on the very first day, what happens? Here comes this very tough decision on Iraq. Well, guess what, guys? This is what being a world leader means. It means tough decisions. It's not just parade floats and you get your name on the door at the Security Council.
You're saying he took the easy way out. You're saying that...
Absolutely, he certainly did. And I think at times where you have these defining moments where you have to go to across the ocean to deal with Hitler, when you have Milosevic, or when you have, you know, I've heard that Saddam Hussein was, in fact, by definition, a weapon of mass destruction. We have the mass graves. We have a despot, a dictator. This was a bad guy. I supported the war in Iraq. I don't have any problem with that. I think we did a good thing there. My problem is with Mexico, in the sense that they wanted this seat on the Security Council so they could feel like a big, important, relevant player in the world, and then didn't realize that somewhere on the fine print of the contract, it means that you have to make very tough decisions. And this was one of those tough decisions.
Ruben, when you look back and you put yourself in Vicente Fox's boots, I mean, France didn't support the United States, Russia didn't support the United States, China didn't support the United States, Germany didn't support the United States. I mean, these are big boys, big girls countries. I think that, you know, regardless of what we think, if this...
And we know that, we know that in those cases, at least three of the four you mentioned had pending oil deals with the old Iraqi regime. So they were acting in their own self-interest.
And Ruben, there also is a lot of question marks as to whether the United States is not acting in their own self-interest as attacking Iraq. I mean, did we attack Iraq because we wanted to liberate the Iraqis, or did we attack Iraq because we wanted the Iraqi oil? I mean, that is the big question mark that the United States was not able to convince the rest of the world that the reasons why the United States was going in. Two, let's also remember that days before the United States decided that they were going to go into the react unilaterally, basically the White House announced, oh, we're not going to give Mexico anything. We're not going to buy the Mexican vote. We're not going to talk about migration issues as we try to get a vote from Mexico. At the same time, the United States was promising Turkey $30 billion to get their support. Two weeks before the United States attacked Iraq, you know, but Blair was already starting to have internal problems with his support to the United States. Aznar was starting to have a lot of the president of Spain was starting to have a lot of problems, internal problems with his support towards the United States. And the United States wasn't being very helpful. They weren't being very supportive. And there was clearly not the unity that you would see in partners that are about to go to war. So,
Anna Marie, let me just step in here because I do want to try and get to a couple more calls before the end of the program. To Babacar now, who's joining us from Woonsocket, Rhode Island. Hi.
Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
I would like to ask a question to your guests. Don't you think there is something wrong with Mr. Bush? He doesn't speak to Vicente Fox of Mexico. He does not speak to Schroeder of Germany. He doesn't speak to Chirac of France, nor does he speak to Jean Chrétien of Canada. I think Bush does not get along with people. This is not leadership. What do you think?
You're saying that this is not about just Mexican-American relations, that this is a larger symptom of the way this White House is run, Babacar?
Exactly.
Ruben, what do you think?
Well, I think you have to begin to realize that the thaw has begun across the Atlantic. I think the trip to Evian had a meeting, you know, with Chirac, between Bush and Chirac. I think my concern is that while it's thawing or beginning to thaw over the Atlantic, it isn't yet beginning to thaw over the Rio Grande. It should. I don't support the president being personal and petty over these things. Despite how we got to this mess, we're in it now, and both presidents have a responsibility to pull out of it. So I would agree with the caller in that regard, in that the administration, I think, has to stop looking at the world in such black and white terms, despite how we got to this point.
All right, Babacar, thanks very much for that call. You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. Anna Maria, what about the case? What about the argument that there's just simply a price that needs to be paid if you want to be the Prime Minister of Canada or the President of Mexico, that comes with living so close to such a big and powerful country that is so much a part of your own economy?
And it's a very good argument. And we will probably see in the next couple of years the issues, similar issues being raised as the United States makes a decision to, you know, attack Iran, to go into North Korea. I mean, Mexico just made a very, very difficult decision in the National Security Council that probably most listeners aren't aware. They decided to support the United States in assuring immunity to American soldiers that are in these peacekeeping programs around the world. And that in Mexico was a very unpopular decision, but folks, I believed, managed it much better than they had done in the past. They didn't talk too much about it. The press did underline it, but it didn't grab the attention the way other decisions, or especially the decision not to support the United States in their attack against Iraq. So are you saying
this is the beginning of a rebuilding of relationships, that this is Fox making some tentative gesture back towards the White House, the American White House?
I think it is, but at the same time, there's going to be some decisions that basically neither Mexico nor the United States are going to be able to support because of internal politics. For example, I don't believe that there's going to be very much change in the United States migration policy toward Mexicans or undocumented workers in the next year and a half. Why? Because we're starting, you know, the United States is starting to feel the pressures of presidential politics. I believe there's going to be some very difficult decisions in regards to the water dispute between Texas and one of the northern states, Mexican states, which is going to create a lot of frictions. Let me underline that, a lot of frictions between both countries. So let me see if we can get Ruben in here, though, because Ruben, what's
going to turn this? What's either the issue or the piece of politics that you see is going to change this?
You know, an interesting take on that is I think one of the things that could turn it is, in fact, the presidential election. One of the things that happened when Bush left this issue on the table, you know, they all picked up their marbles and went home and said, well, Vicente betrayed us, we're not going to talk about immigration reform, was that he left that issue on the table for Democratic challengers to pick up. And already one has. That's Senator Joe Lieberman from Connecticut, who is suddenly now, in a very opportunistic way, swooped in on the issue and talked about how if he were president, he'd bring Vicente Fox back to the White House and get a deal done. So I think Karl Rove, obviously being no dummy, sees the writing on the wall and says, wait a minute, the election's coming up. We better let Fox out of the deep freeze, because the last thing we want is for the Democrats to steal our issue right from underneath us.
So we're at a low point now, and we should look for things to improve.
I think it will. I think it has to get better. It will get better in part because of politics and political concerns. But you know, one thing that we talked about earlier, there's a big cultural difference. The United States is this indispensable nation to the world, and it is very difficult for my wife and other Mexicans to sometimes understand why it is that the American people send their troops to the Middle East, to Somalia, all over the world. Other countries don't think that way. We do.
I have to stop you there, Ruben. We're just out of time. Thanks for being part of the program today. Ruben Navarrete is a columnist and editorial writer for the Dallas Morning News. And Ana Maria Salazar, thanks for being with us.
I enjoyed it.
Ana Maria is a former policy advisor for the Clinton administration and an expert on national security, particularly in Latin America. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.
You say the things you used to say. What makes you treat me like a piece of clay? Somebody's changed, so let me give you a clue. Why don't you love me like you used to do?